Today what I want to talk about is education and why having an education, gaining an education, is an important thing for a Christian, especially in today's world. I want to follow the concept of education as a thread through the Bible and explain and highlight examples where God has used people who were educated or became educated. You know, we have to start, though, with the Bible, and I'd like you to turn to Deuteronomy 6 and verse 4 and read the passage there. This is one of my favorite passages, and it talks about teaching being a way of life. And as a sideline, of course, learning has to be a part of that way of life. In Deuteronomy 6 and verse 4, we read, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength." Some pretty strong, passionate words there. "These commandments I give to you today are to be upon your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the doorframes of your houses and on your gates." So education about God is something that he takes very seriously. So we know that throughout the Bible, God's called people and called them to become educated of his way. He's also called people of very diverse backgrounds. Many of them started out very meek and humble, but in no way did he expect them to stay that way. We also have to be knowledgeable about the culture we live in to be able to wrestle with its logic and win. We have to be sharpened tools, able to get a job done and capable, ready when that job is presented. Through his teachings and blessings, God allows us to grow in knowledge and understanding, which has many benefits to us in this present age, in addition to the kingdom he has in store for us in the future. Through the study of his word and the knowledge of his plan, we can see through the folly of the world and make right choices when everyone around us is making the wrong choices. The word Bible literally means the book. And Christ is also known as the Word. So these are both literary terms, terms that have to do with knowledge and learning. The very words and medium of God's message requires that his people have a basic level of literacy and education. I have five basic points, which are pretty simple, so I'll read them off first, and then we'll go through them in more detail. First point is, seek first after the knowledge of God. And two, build on that foundation. Three, always be learning and always be growing. Four, be passionate about something. Surround yourself with people of like mind. Those are points four and five. And through all this, education is the key. In Proverbs, in verse 2, or Proverbs 2 and verse 1, and I'm reading primarily from the English Standard Version today. This is, seek first after the knowledge of God. Solomon says, "My son, if you receive my words and treasure up my commandments with you, making your ear attentive to the wisdom and inclining your heart to understanding. Yes, if you call for insight and raise your voice for understanding, if you seek it like silver and search for it as for hidden treasures." These are all very active words. Seek, search. You know, they're not passive. They're not sit on the couch and watch TV. They're go out there and chase this thing down. "Then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God." And he refers to seek like searching for silver or hidden treasure. One of our kids' favorite programs is on the Canadian diamond mines and how these geologists spent, I believe it was close to 30 years searching. Every opportunity, every nickel, spare nickel, everything he did in his career led up to finding those diamond mines and developing them. So everything he did in his business was focused on that goal of finding diamonds because he knew they were out there. And he was passionate about it and drove himself to that end of finding and being successful at that. So I like to think of knowledge of God and knowledge in general as seeking after those diamonds, looking hard for them and finding them, not just giving up easily. "For the Lord, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth comes knowledge and understanding. He stores up sound wisdom for the upright. He is a shield to those who walk in integrity." And there's lots of key words throughout here that talk about character and the type of people you develop, you need to develop into as a part of understanding and learning God's Word. Guarding the paths of justice and watching over the ways of His saints, then you will understand righteousness and justice and equity and every good path. For wisdom will come into your heart and knowledge will be pleasant to your soul. Discretion will watch over you. Understanding will guard you, delivering you from the way of the evil, from the men of perverted speech who forsake the paths of uprightness to walk in the ways of darkness. So once we have that foundation of God's knowledge and that understanding, we have a foundation to build on. But that again takes effort to build on that foundation and to grow our knowledge. We need to use the principles of God and His teachings to filter the knowledge of the world so that we can rightly discern good, what's good and evil among it. In Proverbs 1, in verse 7, Solomon also wrote, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction." So we don't want, that means we need to be teachable. We need to be seeking after knowledge and understanding and learning. My third point was always be learning and always be growing. In Proverbs 18, and this is a quote from King James Version, and verse 15, Solomon said, "The heart of the prudent gets knowledge, and the ear of the wise seeketh knowledge." And we can also find a New Testament reference along the same line, or a corollary to it, and in 1 Corinthians, in verse chapter 3 and verse 18. So here it says, "Let no one deceive himself. If any among you thinks that he is wise in this age, let him become a fool that he may become wise." And this he's saying, in this age, not wise in the knowledge of today, of the people of this time. And the knowledge of God was thought to be foolish. So what he's saying is, get a knowledge of God. That be foolish to the world and gain your knowledge of God so that you may truly become knowledgeable. "For the wisdom of this world is folly with God. For it is written, he catches the wise in their craftiness. And again, the Lord knows the thoughts of the wise, and they are futile." So if the wisdom is based only on the knowledge of man, it's going to be futile. And fourth point, we need to be passionate about something. We need to challenge ourselves to dig deeper into a topic, any topic you enjoy. And part of this is just to keep your mind active and alert and working and growing. And I have a research article I'll read in a moment here that talks about this. So you really want to challenge your mind, whether it's in architecture or needlepoint or zoology. Pick something that you love and understand it, know it, dig into it. My daughter Emma, who's 7, is always telling me, "I'm a scientist." Well, she's not quite a scientist yet, but she wants to be. So we're doing what we can to encourage that. That's what she wants to do. And education can take many forms. So you also can be educated by those around you. And the fifth point I want to highlight is surround yourself with people of like mind. Seek out others who will lift you up and not those who bring you down. Part of the reason we're here today is we've sought out people of like mind. We're part of a group, a congregation, that's willing and able and wanting to learn about God's way. But again, education is the key. And that education takes action. It's not just limited to classroom. I mean, it's around graduation time, which is why this topic is really what I wanted to talk about. Is we have Michael and others who are graduating high school and going on to college. And they need to be commended for that. That's a big, huge step. Stepping out and getting an education. We have others who are completing their educations. And those educations should not be despised. But there are also other forms of education, whether it be apprenticing, learning a skill, a trade, that all those things are valuable and need to be given their due. Travel is also another form of education that is life-altering. I met my wife on a trip to Israel. So travel is a great way, and I think, let's see, there's someone else in here who met someone on a trip. Let's see, I can think of a couple people. I know Sharon, met her fiancé in Italy. So there, travel, and also just traveling changes your perspective on the world. I will never think of the Middle East the way I did until I'd been there. And being there, seeing it, talking with people, you get a different perspective. So there's a tremendous amount that can be learned just by traveling. And hobbies and reading. Can't stress it enough. We should all be readers, whether we like it or not. My wife's family, her brothers, are not readers, and it shows. And I hope they don't hear this tape, but they, you know, they would do well, and they would do better in their careers and their jobs if they were readers. But it's like a point of honor not to be a reader, and I don't understand that. I just don't get it. And I wish if there's one thing I could change about them, it would be that. I like to read, though, from an article on mental exercise. And I had two different references that I found. I read a magazine called The Science News regularly. It's kind of a summary of all kinds of science articles from various journals. And a while back, they had an article. I couldn't find that exact one, but I found the ones that it was based on, which is even better. And I wanted to read part of one of these. Scientists say mental exercise can slow brain deterioration. Want to keep a healthy mind in old age? Into old age? Exercise your brain, researchers say. Studies show fogged memory and slowed wit are not inevitable consequences of getting old, and there are steps people can take to protect their brains. Mental exercise seems crucial. Benefits start when parents read to tots and depend heavily on education. But scientists say it's never too late to start jogging the gray matter. People have to get physical, too. Bad memory is linked to heart disease, diabetes, high-fat diet, all risks people can counter by living healthier lives. In fact, provocative new research suggests that these brain protective steps, mental and physical, may be strong enough even to help influence who gets Alzheimer's disease. There are some things that if you know you have a family history of Alzheimer's and you're just 20 to 30 years old, you can start doing to increase your protective factors, said Dr. Amir Soas of the Case Western Reserve Medical School in Cleveland. It's also good advice for an average baby boomer hoping to stay sharp or the mom priming her child for a lifelong healthy brain. Most important, read. Do crossword puzzles. Pull out the chessboard or Scrabble. Learn a foreign language or a new hobby. Anything that stimulates the brain to think, he said. And cut back on TV. When you watch television, your brain goes into neutral. So much so that Case Western plans to study whether people who contract Alzheimer's watch more TV throughout lives than healthy seniors. And I'll leave these two articles on the back table. They're both very interesting. One is basically use it or lose it is their point, and they give some points on how you can exercise your brain. Well, I have a little mental exercise for you guys. Not real tough. I'm not going to be mean today. I want you to think about people in the Bible and the lives they lived and think about what kind of an education would they have had to do what they did. What do you think? You know, I've got several examples I'm going to read through, but I'd like to hear from you afterwards. Who did you come up with? And what do you think their background was? That one, they were ready to take the opportunity when God handed it to them. And two, there had to have been something more than just the blessing of God opening a door. They had to have been prepared in some way. And whether that knowledge came directly from God or through previous studies, they were ready. So try to think of some people like that. We'll go through several. I'm not going to do them all because I can't tell from that clock with how much time I have. But I'm running out of time, so I've got to keep moving. First one I came and think about is Noah. Noah had to be an engineer. Who else could build a boat? He had to be a zoologist or biologist, and also one heck of a project manager. How could you get that done and gather animals and prophesy and? Bill Cosby has a pretty funny routine about Noah that I've got to find for those who haven't. I think Brandon's never heard it, and I've got to find it so he can hear it. But Noah had to have been one clever guy. And he was someone who also took God at his word. So he had faith in God. And God may have given him the abilities he needed. We don't know. But in the end, he had them, and he got the job done. Abraham lived at the seat of civilization when he was called. And he took that knowledge with him when he went. He knew languages, spoken and written. He was a master negotiator and a diplomat, and also knew military tactics. And thanks to Mr. Osborne, one of our resident scholars, he sent me a quote from Josephus. We discussed topics last week, so he found me this quote out of Josephus about Abraham. And in Book 1, Chapter 2, Chapter 8, Section 2, Paragraph 2, it says, "For whereas the Egyptians were formerly addicted to different customs and despised one another's sacred and accustomed rites and were very angry one with another on that account, Abram conferred with each of them, and, confuting the reasonings they made use of, every one for their own practices, demonstrated that such reasonings were vain and void of truth. Whereupon he was admired by them in those conferences as a very wise man and one of great sagacity. Sagacity? Sagacity? I was right, Aaron. No, I'm going to pay for that one now. I'm wrong now. Yep. When he discoursed on any subject he undertook, and this not only in understanding, but in persuading other men also to assent to him. So he's able to bring other people over to his side and make them see his point. So not only was he skilled at talking, he was teaching in the process. He communicated to them arithmetic and delivered to them the science of astronomy, for before Abram came into Egypt, they were unaccustomed with those parts of learning, for that science came from the Chaldeans into Egypt and from thence to the Greeks also. Now I would say Josephus, I don't know how he knew this or if he made it up, but it would fit. And Abraham's first son, Isaac. Isaac was blessed very much by God through his obedience and his faith in God. But it still took effort on his part. He had to plant. He had to harvest. He had to tend flocks. God gave him the increase, but he had to do the work. He was also knowledgeable of agriculture. And an interesting thing is he dug wells. This is something, and I didn't get time to go back into my notes on historical geography, but there was a certain point in history where they discovered the water table. All wells prior to that point were springs or natural occurring sources of water. And at a certain point, they discovered if you dug deep enough, there's a water table. Well, Isaac and his father Abraham dug wells. And the interesting thing is that he dug the wells, and that was not did not appear to be something common at that time. And that allowed him to use lands that otherwise he would not have been able to. And the people of the land, they relied on the natural wells and springs and streams. And they didn't understand the existence of the water table. In fact, the Philistines blocked up the wells that Abraham had dug and did the same to the wells Isaac dug. If you think about it, they had, and I'm totally supposing here and speculating, but it's kind of fun, a little bit, that they had a belief, very animistic belief. So they had the god of the spring and the god of the stream and the god of the trees and the rocks and the bees and everything. They had gods for absolutely everything. So think about it. Here comes a man, and he digs in the ground and makes a spring. Whoa! That had to kind of put them back on their heels because the gods created the spring. Now they see a man make a spring. So, I mean, this is me speculating, but that's kind of what I wonder, if that wasn't the case, why they went around after him and filling in the holes, because it scared them. And Jacob is an interesting case. Jacob has builds to our fourth point, be passionate. He had a desire to succeed. He was goal-oriented and driven, and he did not waver in his goals. He wanted that birthright. And guess what? He got it. Maybe not the best possible way. He didn't let God work it out in God's way, but he got it. He was driven. He even wrestled with God and held his own for a full night. If it wasn't for God putting his hip out of joint, he might have won. So, you know, he's a pretty determined fellow. And he also wanted Rachel as his wife. And we know for a fact he not only worked 7 years, he worked 14 years to gain her hand in marriage. And he also understood animal husbandry and somewhat about genetics, the whole ordeal with the spotted cattle, where you know, he said, well, if you let me have all the spotted cattle, that'd be great. And there probably wasn't that many, so Laban said, sure, go ahead, you can have the spotted cows, whatever you say. And meanwhile, he's going, all right, I got the bull out behind the hills, we're ready to go. And he had a herd of spotted cattle, it was bigger than Laban's in no time. So he was knowledgeable of many things. Joseph at age 17, Joseph's brothers and his capabilities and dreams had his brothers so concerned that they got rid of him, lest he rule over them. They were very concerned about his capabilities. They knew he was their father's favorite son, but as a result, he was probably the most educated of the bunch. As a young man, the other guys would have been taking care of the fields and the cattle, and Joseph could have been at home with his dad, being schooled in language and architecture, engineering, whatever it was that Isaac or Jacob could teach him. And he eventually came to Egypt. And where did he end up? Not as a mud bucket carrying slave, but a slave in a household. So there was something about him that set him apart, that he did not get a common job of a slave. He got a household slave. And not only that, in a very, very short amount of time, it was clear that he was running Potiphar's house. He was the master of the house, beneath his master. So when he was away on business, he ran the affairs of the house. And not only that, after the whole episode with Potiphar's wife and he was sent to prison, he ran the prison. He took care of all the needs of the prisoners, and the man who ran the prison basically said, "You're running the show. I'm going to have a cup of tea." And we also know that he ended up running the... Well, I read that. And we know that he ultimately came to be second only to Pharaoh himself, running the affairs of Egypt. I'd like you to turn and read this passage. It's in Genesis 41 and verse 37. And I'll start reading Genesis 41, verse 37. And this is after he's interpreted the dream for Pharaoh. "This proposal pleased Pharaoh and all his servants. And Pharaoh said to his servants, 'Can we find a man like this in whom is the Spirit of God?' The Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'Since God has shown you all this, there is none so discerning and wise as you are. You shall be over my house, and all my people shall order themselves as you command. Only as regards the throne will I be greater than you.'" So here was an opportunity that Joseph, yes, God gave him the answer to interpret the dream, but that answer opened the door to an opportunity that ultimately saved his family. "And then Pharaoh took his signet, and Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'See, I've set you over all the land of Egypt.' Then Pharaoh took his signet ring from his hand and put it on Joseph's hand, and clothed him in garments and fine linen, and put a gold chain about his neck. And he made him ride in his second chariot, and they called out before him, 'Bow the knee.' Thus he set him over all the land of Egypt. Moreover, Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'I am Pharaoh, and without your consent, no one shall lift up hand or foot in the land of all Egypt.' And Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zaphnath-Paneah, and he gave him in marriage to Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On. So Joseph went out over the land of Egypt. Joseph was 30 years old when he entered into the service of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went through all the land of Egypt at age 30. How many of us here are 30 or older? Raise your hand. How many are near 30? Would you, and feel that given the opportunity, would you be able to step in as vice president of a large country? No takers? I think you're being... there we go. We got one taker. All right. That's what I like to see. Seriously, he had to have had the skills and the abilities to do the job, or he would not have been there very long. So he was prepared. He was ready when the opportunity arose. Next, we go to Moses. Moses was educated in Pharaoh's court. He was, by all other accounts and references, was an Egyptian up until he was a man. And probably at that point, started figuring things out and discovering, I'm not like the rest of these guys. His own history would have been recorded in the annals of Egypt, the history of the Hebrews. He would have had access to that in their libraries. And again, this is speculation and supposition, but he probably learned everything that we know in the first five books of the Bible from reading what had been written by his own people that came out of Canaan into Egypt in the prior generation. So he probably educated himself on his own people. And we know when he became 40, he kind of switched camps and said, "I'm not an Egyptian now. I'm going to be an Israelite," and stood up for them. And so he began to identify, probably through his education and through God's intervention in his life, with the Israelites and their plight. And we know that the Hebrews were not slaves the entire time in Egypt, so they would have had the ability to have written their history and educated their people. And it was only in those last generations that they were slaves and subjugated. You know, in reference to Moses, I want to read something he wrote about what God hates and does not want us to learn. And these are things that, if you think about them, are becoming more prevalent in our day and age. In Deuteronomy 18 and verse 9, we read, "When you come into the land that the Lord your God is giving you, you shall not learn to follow the abominable practices of those nations." Again, that's Deuteronomy 18, verse 9. "Therefore, there shall none be found among you, anyone who burns his son or his daughter as an offering, anyone who practices divination or tells fortunes or interprets omens or a sorcerer or a charmer or a medium or a wizard or necromancer. For whomever does these things is an abomination to the Lord. And because of these abominations, the Lord your God is driving them out before you. You shall be blameless before the Lord your God, for these nations which are about to dispossess listen to fortune tellers and to diviners. But as for you, the Lord your God has not allowed you to do this. The Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me from among you, from your brothers. It is to him you shall listen. And this is, I think, a prophetic reference to Christ. So the prevalence of such beliefs and practices, you think about it, tarot card reading, you know, miss whatever name you can call and get your fortune told. You know, Diane Warwick was doing ads for her. I think they shut her down eventually, but there's 10 more in her place. You know, people, fortune telling and all these things that are based on a lie. They're based on nonsense. That's what people are seeking is truth today. And we have to be able to see it for what it is and battle it and recognize it and have the logic in our hand to knock it down or refute it. In the time of the judges, we know for a fact that literacy was a common thing. In the story of Gideon, after he was chasing down the kings of Midian and trying to catch them, he stopped through two different towns, Succoth and Peniel, and asked for bread for his troops, and they told him, "Now, after you catch them, we'll feed you." And he was not very happy about that, so after he'd caught the kings and was on his way back, he captured a young man in the field and questioned him. And that young man wrote down for him 77 names of the men who were the leaders of Succoth. So think about it. Shepherd boy out in the field, he not only has the ability to remember and write down the 77 names of the elders of the city, but he can write them down. And you think about it today in most pastoral societies that are left, how many of the kids can read and write? Probably not that many. When I was in the Middle East, you know, the little kids were out in the field. They were out there on a school day tending sheep, you know, the Palestinian kids. So I doubt they were getting an education. And we'll hit another point in the story of Daniel just real quickly here that kind of reinforces that, in that Daniel, Meshach, and Shadrach and Abednego stood out. Why'd they stand out? They had a base education. So they came from a culture, they came from a background where people were educated. And David, we could go on and on and on, so I'll just give him a little bit of coverage because that's a whole topic by itself. David, what was he? He started out as a shepherd. He was an accomplished musician and writer. He was a statesman, a warrior, military strategist. And he was a man after God's own heart. And how did he start? The lowest of the low, the runt of the family, a shepherd, kid kicked out the back door to go take care of the sheep while everybody else was the big men on campus, you know, the warriors. So, you know, God picks the meek and the humble, but he doesn't expect them to stay that way. Solomon, I like to read a little bit about out of Proverbs on Solomon. And Solomon is quite the case. He sought after knowledge of all kinds, and we have some of our best quotes about, you know, God's knowledge being the basis coming from him and not sticking to the knowledge of the world as a source. In Proverbs 1, in verse 1, the proverb of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to understand words of insight, to receive instruction in wise dealing, in righteousness, justice, and equity, to give prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the youth. Let the wise hear and increase in learning, and the one who understands obtain guidance. To understand a proverb and a saying, the words of the wise and their riddles. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and forsake not your mother's teaching, for they are a graceful garland for your head and pendants for your neck. So, you know, Solomon had a great, great understanding and knowledge about knowledge itself, and knew that learning and educating yourself was a very, very important thing. And my favorite, Nehemiah, which I'm running short on time, so I won't go too much on. Nehemiah is a great example. If you want to know and read one book, the Bible, that shows someone who could conceive a plan, execute the plan, and, you know, come up and handle challenges that were thrown at him that weren't taken into account in this plan and still succeed. Nehemiah is a great example of someone who took on a challenge and got things done. And I'll read a little bit out of here. And you can make up your mind whether all this is coincidence or not. O Lord, in Nehemiah 1, verse 11, O Lord, let your ear be attentive to the prayer of your servant and to the prayer of your servants who delight to fear your name, and give success to your servant today. Grant him mercy in the sight of this man. Now, being King Artaxerxes, being this man. Now I was cupbearer to the king. So before he even starts, he's going to God and saying, hey, I got a plan, but please give me success. In the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was before him, I took up the wine and gave it to the king. Now I had not been sad in his presence. Coincidence? Not coincidence. What do you think? He had not been sad in the presence of the king before, and this day he's downcast. And the king said to me, why is your face sad, seeing you are not much sick? This is nothing but sadness of heart. Then I was very much afraid. Why was he afraid? Because it was working. And he had to go to the next step, where there was the risk. I said to the king, let the king live forever. Why should not my face be sad when the city, the place of my father's graves, lies in ruin and the gates have been destroyed by fire? Then the king said to me, what are you requesting? Got to the point. This king is a very sharp tack too. So I prayed to the God of heaven. So here was the door starting to open. What did he do? He didn't rush in. Quick prayer. He said, you know, make it go right. And I said to the king, if it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor in your sight, that you send me to Judah, to the city of my father's graves, that I may rebuild it. And the king said to me, the queen sitting beside him, how long will you be gone, and when will you return? Another project manager. So it pleased the king to send me when I had given him a time. So, and on top of that, he asked for letters of introduction, had to get supplies and troops and to make his way successfully to Judah and to rebuild Jerusalem. So again, I mean, this is scratching the surface of Nehemiah. Esther and Mordecai, another great story where Mordecai prepared Esther. He taught her about the ways of the palace court, so she was knowledgeable of what she could or could not do if she went before the king. Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, as my mother used to say, my shack, your shack, and a bungalow. Why were they chosen? They were learned, probably skilled already in reading and writing and languages and other skills. So they stood out from captives from other lands, other slaves, where they did not have a culture of education. And, of course, we cannot ignore Christ. He was learned and a well-educated young man. At 12, he could hold his own with the elders in the temple. And if you want a reference for that, that's Luke 2 and verse 41 through 52. He was also a carpenter and a tradesman with skills that he had learned and could put to use to feed himself and his family. Paul also was a well-educated man, passionate about his calling. And in Acts 22 and verse 3, he says, I am a Jew, born in Tarsus of Cilicia and brought up in this city, educated at the feet of Gamaliel according to the strict manner of the law of our fathers, being zealous for God as all of you are this day. He was also a tent maker. So, you know, he was the right man for the job. And when the opportunity knocked, so to speak, when God knocked him blind and told him, hey, you're going the wrong way, he said, all right, I'll listen. And he was ready for that job. And he had the tenacity and the ability to get it done. Like many of the people from the Bible, God has called us, given us opportunities to learn and grow, to prepare and be ready for when he opens an opportunity for us. Our beginnings, in the case of most, if not all of us, were humble, but just like Joseph or David, who started out as sheep herders, but ended up as great leaders and rulers, we have the opportunity to have such positions in God's kingdom. We have the responsibility now to be preparing, both by studying and knowing the Word of God and seeking God's will in our lives, but also to be seeking out challenges that we can learn from, that we build our capabilities and knowledge.